greet you in Jesus' name this morning. I welcome all of you to our worship service here this morning at Swatara. Thank you for choosing to worship with us. It is certainly a beautiful day to be in God's house again this morning and to worship. I enjoyed the worship. Last night, I picked up one of those cards last weekend that were laying on the table that talked about the different astronomical events, and it talked about the meteor shower that's supposed to climax here this weekend. So last night we went out and laid on the trampoline and watched, and we saw meteors shoot across the sky, and it was just a beautiful night. We stayed out too long, really. And this morning was cool and just starts to feel like summer begins to lose its grip and fall starts to I'm sure we'll have some warm weather yet, but starts to make its entrance. And thought about that, and it ties in somewhat with my message this morning. The title of the sermon that I have this morning is Back to School. And school is going to start again in just over 2 weeks, our Christian day schools. And I just thought about our schools and the significant undertaking that it is with our church schools and the blessing that they are, but also the cost that they are. We lifted an offering this morning for our Christian Day School. We could replace the lighting in our parking lot with the money we lifted in that offering, but it's going to go to the school. Why did we decide to start Mennonite schools? And what was the vision then, and what is the vision now? If we had a brothers' meeting, or we had business meeting coming up here soon, and if we would put on that agenda that we want to do something different, we're going to start our own school. All of us were attending North Lebanon High or Jonestown Elementary or wherever your children go, and we'd put that on the agenda. How would that conversation go? What would the vote look like? So I just want to talk about that, about schools and that vision a little bit. Why do we have our own schools? The Christian Day School movement in our area was strong in the 1940s and 50s here in this local area, I believe. Lancaster Mennonite School started in 1942, from my research. How many of you attended a Christian Day School for your schooling? Lots of you, thank you. Of course, it was not always that way, and I'm sure there are some here that attended public school and could tell us more about that. But in our church community, attending a Mennonite school has become very, very normal. And in my lifetime, it was always that way, and so I'm just used to it. But it wasn't always that way. And I'd like to talk about why our own schools. What were the issues when the schools were started? And I'd like you to tell me. I researched a little bit and went some by memory, but some of you are involved in the schools, some of you are historians, and perhaps some of you can remember the issues from that time. What were the issues, and I'm going to put them on the board, what were the issues that helped to gain the momentum to start our own church schools? Do you know what any of them were?
Allegiance to the flag. I'm just going to say patriotism. Allegiance to flag. Where obviously in our churches we would teach our children to be good citizens, but we're not comfortable with pledging allegiance to the flag because of how we are not people who will go to war. So that was an issue for sure. What else? Not that you couldn't be at school and stand but not pledge allegiance. You could. What else?
I don't know if this is in your talk. I know it was a big deal when there was consolidation.
Yep.
That certainly was a big one.
if I can spell that without my notes. Consolidation. Basically, what was happening in the 1940s and 50s is the little one-room schoolhouses in your community where your children walked across the field and you knew who the teacher was and you knew who the other 10 families were, those schools were all closing and buses were coming out, loading the children up, and you were headed into the local, into a much larger school where lots of villages and lots of rural families came together for schooling. And the local community began to lose some of its influence and pulse on the school. That was a big piece of what was happening right then. What else?
Teaching of evolution.
Okay, evolution was one, I believe. So you had science books were changing. And there was a lot of emphasis on science, not wrongly at all. The whole space race was taking place, and so there was a lot of interest in educating young people and promoting science. But part of that was evolution was being taught as a scientific fact, which was certainly a conflict as well. Any others? What year did television begin to enter the average home? Year-ish, era. I don't know, but it was an issue. I know it was an issue. I read the book on when Paradise Mennonite School was built. It was an issue there because the churches down the Hagerstown area had closed-circuit TVs for some of their teaching, but then depending what would happen, they would play different news, you know, if the World Series was being played or something like that, they would allow parts. And so that started to be a concern as well. Of course, there was the whole sports gym class. And then, you know, I think there was dress issues with that. I believe I studied... I didn't spend a lot of time on that list, but I believe that was some of those. Anything else that any of you are aware of that could be on there?
And in the 60s, I believe, it was official that they took the Bible reading out of the school.
Yeah, that is true. Removed... Removed Bible reading from the classroom, that was in the 60s for sure. So the culture was shifting, and there were pressures that were there and that were concerning. And the interest was to educate, the Mennonite families wanted to educate their own children in a Christ-centered environment and Christ-centered curriculum that supported that. And we'll look at that more as we go along. But initially, there was some pushback to the Christian day school movement and to private schools and to homeschooling. And you can find different accounts of that. One of them, I picked up a children's book. I believe it is, I forget who the publisher is, but picked it up and was reading it to my children. It's about a little school in Iowa in the 1960s. And there was a local area there that decided that the Amish children will go to the public school, and that was what the law was at the time, and they really pushed that. So they just came out to the Amish families and left them know the bus is going to come by and pick up your children. And the next day, they sent their children to their one-room school. There was a young sister teacher there, just like we would have in our classrooms, but it was one room, so she was there alone. And she was there and taught their children. And so the next thing they did was told the dads that they must come into town. And they would hitch up their buggies every night and go into town. And they started to fine them. Now, the fathers didn't pay the fines. They said, we haven't done anything wrong. And so because we haven't done anything wrong, we don't feel we should pay the fines. So they weren't paying them. But fines were being given every day. And so the officials said,
they will come out and get the children. So the school superintendent wasn't allowed to do that, but there was a new office that was made called a truant officer, and the truant officer was allowed to go out and make sure the children came to school. So they got a bus, they went over to the school, and the truant officer was there, and the local sheriff came, and even the school nurse came along, and they said, we're going to get the children, we're taking them into school. When they came in to the school there, into the classroom where the children were, the children ran and hid in the cornfield. And so eventually they packed up and went back. But they circled back and came back again, and at one point they were even grabbing some school children, trying to drag them into the bus. The school girls all linked arms and held on to each other and wouldn't let go. So some trauma that went along with that. It was a difficult time for those families. And it continued to escalate until the local authorities went actually to the capital of Iowa, and they didn't get a lot of support there. There was an attorney that was representing the school as well by then. I don't know if he was volunteering or if the families reached out to him. But they actually went to the governor of Iowa and requested National Guard to help get these children to the public school. And the governor of Iowa said, no, if there's a law in the land that says people may not worship God how they want to, it's a bad law, we're going to change it. And so laws were rewritten over that time as well. But there was a governor that was sympathetic to the Amish people and their interest to educate their own children their own way and to worship God in their own way, which was a tremendous blessing. And that still exists today. There are still people who are sympathetic and appreciate how families may choose to educate their children differently than what the public school system is. There are also people today who are not sympathetic to it. And so I think it's good for us to just evaluate again, what was the vision? What's our vision today? The next point I want to look at is, why are our schools, what is the current landscape? That's why our schools, what were the issues? I'd like to look at why our own schools, what's the current landscape? Stephen Brubaker, in the little booklet, Where To?, made this observation. He says, it has been many years since the first visionaries insisted that Mennonites should have their own schools if we wanted to keep our children's hearts. That initial vision and energy is waning and needs to be renewed by fresh vision. This vision must have more to do with what we do want for our children rather than what we don't want. And so Stephen Brubaker says there was a tremendous energy as families said, this is what we don't want for our children. And we need to look again and say, what do we really want? As parents today, and as we think about in a little over 2 weeks as our children go back to school, and they're certainly going to be influenced by a variety of factors in the classroom. What are the things that we want? And I would just want to talk briefly, too, about what are, in the current landscape, what are the pressures that are being faced in the public school system today? And I have a friend who is going to pull his children out of the public school system this fall for the very first time. He's going to homeschool them. And we sat together and talked, and he said, you know, there's a couple of things, and some of the big ones that he mentioned was that his children spend 3 hours a day at school on school-issued devices, and he said, I believe in very limited screen time for children, and that's what I practice in my home, and they spend 3 hours on a school-issued device every day, and he said, the teacher is in the room, it's not that they couldn't stand up and teach, it's just the way it is. He's very concerned about it. He says, every child at school has a smartphone. Every single one. And he said, it's a disaster. They view anything they want to, anytime they want to, on their smartphone all day long. Complete fail. Anything. And he said, his daughter's 14, and all of her friends have boyfriends, and most of them are sexually active at 14 years old. And he says, I look at it, and I look at my children, and I think about what I want, and I have to make a decision. All right? And so I think, as I think about the visionaries of the Christian Day School, the visionaries of that movement were right, and there is no going back. We're going to have to look at the issue, and we're going to have to embrace the effort that it takes, and we're going to have to raise our children with what we want, how we want to influence them. The next point that I want to look at is why our own schools, what does the Bible say? And I invite you to turn to Deuteronomy chapter 6. It's a classic scripture on teaching another generation. Deuteronomy chapter 6. And I'm going to read the first 21 verses without comment and then circle back and just pull a few truths and a few principles out of these verses that are here for us this morning. Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 1. Now these are the commandments, the statutes, and the judgments which the Lord your God commanded to teach you, that ye might do them in the land whither you go to possess it, that thou mightest fear the Lord thy God, to keep all his statutes and his commandments, which I command thee, thou and thy son and thy son's sons, all the days of thy life, and that thy days may be prolonged. Hear therefore, O Israel, and observe to do it, that it may be well with thee, and that ye may increase mightily, as the Lord God of thy fathers hath promised thee, in the land that floweth with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our Lord is one. The Lord our God is one Lord. And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy might. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart. And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thine hand, and they shall be frontlets between thine eyes, and thou shalt write them upon the posts of thy house and on thy gates. And it shall be, when the Lord thy God shall have brought thee into the land which he sware unto thy fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give thee great and goodly cities which thou buildest not, and houses full of all good things which thou fillest not, and wells digged which thou diggest not, vineyards and olive trees which thou plantest not, when thou shalt have eaten and be full, then beware, lest thou forget the Lord, which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt, from the house of bondage. Thou shalt fear the Lord thy God, and serve him, and shalt swear by his name. Ye shall not go after other gods, or the gods of the people which are round about you. For the Lord your God is a jealous God among you, lest the anger of the Lord thy God be kindled against thee, and destroy thee from off the face of the earth. Ye shall not tempt the Lord your God as ye tempted him in Massah. Ye shall diligently keep the commandments of the Lord your God and his testimonies and his statutes which he hath commanded thee. And thou shalt do that which is right and good in the sight of the Lord, that it may be well with thee, and that thou mayest go in and possess the good land which the Lord sware unto your fathers, to cast out all thine enemies from before thee, as the Lord hath spoken. And when thy son asketh thee in times to come, saying, what meaneth the testimonies and the statutes and the judgments which the Lord our God hath commanded you? Then shalt thou say unto them, we were Pharaoh's bondmen in Egypt, and the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand. And I'm going to stop there and then circle back to the beginning of the chapter again and just touch on a few of the truths that are in these verses when it comes to teaching and teaching our children and another generation. And I'm going to be quick to say here that as you think about this passage and as we think about teaching, that is not a project of our schools alone, of course. Teaching our children is something that is a responsibility of our church, our homes, and the school. The churches and the homes have come together to equip the schools to be a blessing to our homes. But it is not something that is the school's work alone. But let's just look here. The first thing that I see is in chapter 6, verse 2, and that is that teaching, successful teaching, and when you think of teaching in a Mennonite home and Mennonite school, and what we want to teach and get across to our children is a multi-generational project. He says, that thou mightest fear the Lord thy God, to keep all his statutes and commandments, which I commanded thee, thou and thy son's son, all the days of thy life. This is a project, and the children of Israel, as God talked about how he wanted them to hand over their beliefs, he said, instruct them in a way that will affect you and your son and your son's son.
right? This is generations of faithfulness that we hope to produce through the teaching that we do. And we need to think about that as we approach teaching and as we approach the teaching that I do in my home and the teaching that will happen in school. We're looking for something that isn't just going to last for my children. It's going to last for their children. And it's going to last for their children. Because there's enough substance and enough value and enough truth that it's something that can be passed on for generations. The next thing that I see in verse 4 says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord." And I just want to point out that our faith should never be separated from our teaching of the next generation. The core pieces of faith and what we believe has to be woven right into the teaching that we do. Actually, our children's understanding of reality should have God right at the center. And when you look at this passage in chapter 6, and Moses is telling the children of Israel, here's what I want you to teach. Here's how I want you to teach your children. And he comes right to the core, the number one priority in verse 4. "Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one Lord." And that truth is still the number one truth that needs to be taught to our children. And that is God and who he is. And that God needs to be the center of their understanding of reality. And when they begin to think about life's big questions of who am I, that's framed in who is God. And where am I going, it's framed in God is in control. Where did the earth come from? It was created by God. What's happening on a national scene and what's going to happen this election in November? We believe God overrules in those things, right? The Bible says that and we believe it. And those truths, that truth needs to be foundational in the instruction of our children. When I'm having family worship at home, that has to be a foundational truth. When I'm laying on the trampoline at night watching stars streak across the sky, I'm underscoring that truth. There's a tremendous God who's created all this. When they head off to school on September or on August the 27th, that truth has to be there. That there's a God who is at the absolute center of who we are in our story. Next point is found in verse 5, "And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy might." Our education and the way we teach our children and train them does need to foster a love for God as well. It's not just enough to know that there's a God there. We have to position our children to love that God and to see his faithfulness and understand that he's a God of love. And even a God who controls everything, and then there's things that happen that we can't explain. And how do our children see us respond to that? You know, what do I say when things don't go the way I think they should? When obviously there's a God who is in complete control of the events of life. And can I rest in that when things don't go the way I wish they would? Can our education position our children to love the God who is at the center of reality? Verse 6, next point that I have is that we need to own and internalize what we're teaching. It needs to be in our heart. Verse 6, "And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thy heart." Now, I remember when you were teaching 7th grade English and you're teaching what a verbal is, there's days when you're like looking at your book and it's like a verbal is, and then you're looking up and you're telling them, and then you're like pausing because you're trying to remember for sure what a verbal is, and you should have studied a little bit more the night before. That's okay when you're teaching verbals. You're going to have those days. It shouldn't be every day probably, but you're going to have days where you're there at English and you're kind of stumbling around and trying to remember for sure. That's not okay on foundational things of like who is God and is he in control. Those things for the teacher we need to internalize. They have to be in our heart. It has to be something that just flows out of who we are. And by the way, at my age, there are still days when in our own stumbling humanity, we really wonder, does God really have this under control, right? But we have to come back to, in my own heart, yes, God has under control all of
the world and the details of my life. And he is a good God and he does all things well. And I have to own them and they have to be in my heart. And if they are, it flows out of my life to my children every day. And the same is true in the classroom. The students can learn whether or not the teacher is someone who God is at the center of their reality. And that is all of our lives, we pursue that, to grow in God and who he is. So I'm not saying here that before you ever step into a classroom, you need to understand and own that all perfectly. But it does need to be in our heart. And our heart pursuit does need to be to follow God and to show him and his faithfulness to the people around us. And so we need to internalize it. Next point in verse 7 is that teaching is woven into the daily rhythms of life. Thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and thou shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest in the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. So you see this teaching is just woven into all of life. When you're sitting down and when you're rising up, when you're as you go through the motions of life, you're teaching. And you say, well, we do school. I mean, that's a very, now we're in school and now we're home. And that is true. But there's teaching, of course, going on the whole time. But the point here is that we can't have a system where as we're going through life, we're teaching about God and who he is and how that affects our lives. And then they're over in classroom and they're teaching something totally different. Take evolution in the science books, for example. At home, I'm trying to teach them that God created the earth, but when they're over at school, we're teaching them something entirely different. What's here in this verse 7 is that as you go through life, all the motions of life, woven into there is a consistent teaching program that aligns with our principles and our values. And the other point that I have from this passage yet is found in verse 20 and 21, and that is that we will tell our story of who God is and what he has done for us. And you see that clearly. When your son asks you in time to come, saying, what mean the testimonies and the statutes and the judgments which the Lord our God hath commanded? Then thou shalt say unto thy son, we were Pharaoh's bondmen in Egypt, and the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand. And so you will tell stories of who God is. Some of them will be Bible stories, of course, and we're doing that. Some of them will be stories of Anabaptist church life. Some of them might be stories of faithfulness that God had in your parents or grandparents, and some of them will be your own story of what God has done in your life and how he's influenced that and how he's come to mean so much to you. And you'll tell them to your children, and you'll tell them to your classroom, and we need to tell those stories. The next part that I have is I just want to have a word for the students. Those of you that are headed back to school in 2 weeks, some of you are looking forward to it. Some of you haven't looked forward to it yet, but you'll get there here in the next 2 weeks, I'm sure. But I just want to remind you that the opportunity to go to a school where a Christian day school where the students around you come from similar church families and the teacher shares values similar to what your parents do is a tremendous blessing and a tremendous privilege. And it is not something that we should take for granted because we may not always have it. But it's a tremendous privilege that we have. And don't waste it. I think the cost for schooling at our school is around $11,000 per family, which is a lot of money. Now, someone once said, if you think education is expensive, try ignorance. It's hard to measure that, but it's still a lot of money. And I remember one day when I was teaching, I had 3 sixth-grade boys, and there was a good bit of unrest and snickering going on. And so after a while, I said, all right, you, I don't know what's going on. I don't need to know right now. But in a few minutes, it's recess time, and you just stay here. And then we'll talk about what's going on. So they sat there bashfully until recess came, and we dismissed everyone. And I said, so, every time I would turn around and write on the board, there'd be snickers and scuffles. And so what was going on? And they started to tell me. I don't remember what all the things were. I know one of the things, I don't want to give ideas here, but they took a tissue
And I twisted it all up and wrapped scotch tape around it, but left the end that it would flutter, and then they would fly them to each other. Ooh. Ooh. So they were doing that, and there might have been some erasers flying around. And I said, well, here's the thing. Your dads pay $5,000 to have you come sit in this classroom. I'm going to call your dads tonight. If he's okay with you throwing little tissues around on his $5,000 schooling, I'll be okay with it. On the other hand, if he's not okay with it, we'll have to figure out what to do. Now, I knew the dads well enough, I was not taking a gamble. So I called him up and the issue got resolved. One of the boys, his older brother, told me years later, he said, my dad told him, if your teacher calls you again and you're carrying on like that, you will get spanked. And that that was the end of the carrying on. So, but my point here is, you have, as students, have an incredible gift. And respect that gift of Christian education. Right now, as you go back to school, is your opportunity to equip yourself for whatever God plans to bring into your life. And to start to lay a foundation. God has a plan. He knows what it is. He knows what he's going to call you to. You don't know, and I don't know. Who knows where it will be? But you have a tremendous opportunity to start laying a foundation that God can build on for the rest of your life in the different things that he calls you into. And it will be a lot of different places. In a congregation our size, the amount of students that are going to go back into our classrooms, make good use of that time. I want to talk a little bit about our Christian education. Where do we go from here? What are the things that we should be thinking about? I talked about how for a Christian day school, the church and the home have joined together and pooled resources to supply schools. There is a side where you could answer the biblical call to teach children. I could answer that on an individual level, and I could homeschool my children, and I could teach them, and that wouldn't be wrong. But we've chosen in our churches for homes and churches to come together and pool resources. And then we take people who have the gifting for teaching and we put them in the classroom to teach. And we bring a lot of things together. The businessman who knows how to replace roofs is in charge when it's time to replace the roof on the school. And there's just a whole bunch of different ways that we bless each other in that way. It's not completely unlike the church potluck where we come to church and we have a fellowship meal and we bring a giant dish of brown buttered potatoes. Now we all like brown buttered potatoes, or at least most of us do, but if I told my children we're going home and the only thing we're having for lunch is brown buttered potatoes, you know, they wouldn't be completely happy. But when we all bring giant dishes of all sorts of different things, we eat brown buttered potatoes and meatballs and beans. And some of that same principle applies in our Christian day schools where we come together as a community and we all contribute in different ways so that we can bring consistent education and blessing to every family that's here. And it has been a wonderful blessing. The Christian day school certainly has been. Oh, yes, there's been challenges. And oh, yes, there's stories we could tell of disappointments, but it has been a blessing. And again, our schools, for our schools to fulfill their mission in our Mennonite church life, they need to assist us in positioning our children to embrace a God-centered worldview, to love God with their whole heart, and to embrace conservative Anabaptist thought and practice, right? If they don't, they're failing in some way. And so, as our churches and homes and schools cooperate again this fall, what are some things that should be coming out of the classroom? And as I thought about and mused and was reading, I wrote a few things down, and I'm going to share those, and I'm probably missing some of the really big ones, and we can keep having this conversation for a long time. But one of the things is that we have to teach sufficient reading comprehension skills that allow students to bring inspiring and thought-provoking study from the King James Version text. Now, I'm not saying King James Version text is the only text, but we should be able to come out of classrooms being able to pick up the King James Version Bible and expound out of it in a way that is enjoyable and edifying and uplifting like we had in Sunday school today. A whole bunch of people did it. Wonderful. We need to keep on doing that. Another one is we need a broad enough worldview to engage many cultures with the gospel. Lebanon County is a wonderful place to grow up. It's not nearly the only place where God's kingdom is going forward. And we just have to open up our minds enough to see, you know, God's got work going on all around the world. He has me plunked in Lebanon County. I have no idea where he wants Jefferson to go, or he wants Seth to go, or he wants whoever, Heather or, right? But God has a plan, and the world is big. And I don't know where he's going to go, but our schools need to start to unlock that. What does God want for you? That's why we teach Spanish in school. That's one of the reasons. You can actually use Spanish very effectively in Lebanon County now, but it's one of the reasons. There's a lot of places to go. We need to teach sufficient math skills to lead, for our children to lead business, handle finances, and understand the implications of debt, as well as sew clothing and provide food in the kitchen. There was some massive coordinating and math and so forth going on back in the kitchen last Sunday, exactly a week ago. Wonderful thing. But we need to train and equip, and the school is part of that. We need to teach enough computer skills in order to staff the many jobs that are now completed with computers. It needs to happen in the classroom. And I know you can go through school, come out of school, and put a tool belt on and swing a hammer very successfully. But you just have to think about, do you want to swing a hammer for the rest of your life? And there's just a whole array of jobs that it's beneficial to have computer skills. We should be learning them at school. If you go into the farm, odds are you're going to want a computer. So we should be teaching some of those at school as we're able. Another one, appreciation for serving others necessary to succeed in service and retail industries. And that's a big thing right now. Since COVID, a lot of businesses have stopped offering good service. The ones that are still offering good service are very successful. But basic practicing the golden rule and good service will set your business apart. So start practicing it at school a while. Have a day where you make lunch and have two little fast food restaurants and see which one can offer the best customer service. Do you know what the biggest difference is between McDonald's and Chick-fil-A? It's not chicken and hamburgers. It's service. All right? And we can start to teach that in our schools already. Learn to serve and be very good at it. A basic understanding of how to apply Christian principles to business challenges. I talked about that already, but some of the, you know, what ifs of the business world and how do you relate to it. Enough critical thinking skills to begin sorting out the deluge of voices they will hear in the information age. As they leave our classrooms, they're going to be inundated with information. And some of this needs to happen at home. I'm not pinning all this on the school. Some of it has to happen at school. There needs to be some good dialogue and debate. What is truth? And teach them how to mine it out. A resistance to the constant attraction to merely amuse and entertain. Right? Because there just is endless amusement too, if that's what you want. But we looked at the Sunday school lesson this morning, and we talked about how if we want to be successful and we want to bear fruit, we're going to have to do some pruning. And the younger we can learn that, the better off we'll be, right? You're going to have to prune away some of the things that are just fun, amusing, and entertaining. If you want to be equipped and be a blessing in God's kingdom. And we could start teaching that a while at a young age. Are we okay if our schools are full of smartphones? Maybe just in the upper grades. Just remember that the more we distract ourselves, the less equipping we'll get done. That's a very basic concept. Another one I thought of as a proper attitudes where the fruit of the Spirit can flourish. Can we do that in our schools? We need to do that in our homes too. Huge challenge. But what does that look like where we have schools where we create a culture and environment and allow attitudes that make lots of room for love and joy and peace? Can we do that in our schools? We need to. And we are, as far as that goes. And then I said, some will need to go for higher education so that we can continue to fill some of those niches that we need to keep this going. And part of that comes from a conversation that I had recently. But in some of our Anabaptist publishing companies that are creating curriculum, they are struggling to find people who can write curriculum for 11th and 12th grade. Who can write a calculus curriculum with an Anabaptist perspective? That's a tough role to fill. So when the Christian Day School movement started, one of the emphases there was a teacher had to be certified by the state, and to be certified by the state, you had to get a certain level of training, and we balked at that, and rightfully so. But there is a little bit of a lapse now because we said we're okay, we're concerned about higher education and college, and so we pulled away from that, and now we've left a bit of a void. And we might have to look at, can we strategically fill that in a way that there's not casualties to continue to bless the kingdom in areas where it's needed. On August 27, a great undertaking will continue. Our Christian day schools will resume. And God bless you. Students as you go, teachers as you stand in front of the classroom, parents, moms as you start packing lunches, dads as you pay the tuition. It is a lot. I know it's a lot. Ignorance is also incredibly expensive. And not only dads pay tuition, we get help with tuition here from people who don't have any children headed for school yet because they believe that if God calls me to a family, I certainly want a school there. And we've got grandpas sitting here who have watching their grandchildren go through. Remember that this teaching is a multi-generational process. And so we buy in across the generations. But God bless you as you go back to the classroom. And I just want to read a poem yet that I believe was written by Vance Springer. I took a piece of plastic clay and idly fashioned it one day, and as my fingers pressed it still, it moved and yielded at my will. I came again when days were past, the bit of clay was hard at last. The form I gave it still it bore, but I could change that form no more. I took a piece of living clay and gently formed it day by day and molded with my power and art a young child's soft and yielding heart. I came again when days were gone. It was a man I looked upon. That early impress still he wore. I could change it nevermore. Let's pray.